Hello and welcome to the Majlis Ready for Europe, the Liberties Current Affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis podcast and Ready for Europe, the Liberties media manager here in Washington, D.C. As the President Biden moves into the White House, he has a lot on the table. And foreign policy, especially Central Asia, might not be his immediate concern. However, as the dust settles down in Washington, D.C., the expectations are that the region will be ultimately brought into his attention, perhaps in the context of Afghan talks, Iran nuclear deal, or maybe countering Russian and Chinese influence in the region. But once it does, he will find a much different Central Asia, the one with full of challenges, lots of setbacks, and not much progress compared to since he left the office last time. Now, what vision of Central Asia can be expected from the Biden administration? And what are the hopes and aspirations of Central Asians from the new administration in the United States? To discuss all these, I am joined by a terrific panel. Ambassador Pamela Spartland, a top former U.S. diplomat on Central Asia with previous assignments in Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and most recently in Uzbekistan. Also, we are joined by Ambassador Bill Courtney, former U.S. ambassador to Georgia in Kazakhstan, and former Ambassador Kadir Toktokulov, most recently Kyrgyz ambassador to the United States and Canada. Earlier, Ambassador Toktokulov was the presidential spokesperson in Kyrgyzstan. And Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free your Pretty Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. Thank you very much, colleagues, for joining us. So let's start from Central Asia. Ambassador Toktokulov, you know, congratulations are pouring into Washington from the world leaders. I have not seen yet any message from Central Asia. Perhaps it is not making the headlines. So what is talk in the region about changes in Washington, D.C.? What are they talking about? And what are the hopes and expectations?
Well, I mean, it was a good day for Kyrgyzstan, as Kyrgyzstan last year was included in the so-called travel ban by President Trump. And one of the first decisions of President Biden was to revoke that travel ban, which looked very good here in Kyrgyzstan and made some people happy who were affected by the ban last year. So it is a positive first day pretty much for Kyrgyzstan in particular, but generally my sense is that countries in Central Asia do not expect a drastic change in U.S. foreign policy towards Central Asia. If we look at Kyrgyzstan, for example, we're having a new president in a few days ourselves. Minister of Foreign Affairs today put out a very positive statement congratulating President Biden on his inauguration and expressing optimism that Kyrgyz-U.S. relations will be stronger and the readiness of the Kyrgyzstan to work with the new administration, and actually congratulated President Biden's decision to rejoin the Paris Climate Agreement. Generally, Kyrgyzstan, I think, was one of the probably more difficult partners in recent years for the United States and Central Asia. And I was actually encouraged myself to see such a positive statement from the Minister of Foreign Affairs on the very first day of President Biden's presidency.
Right. Yeah, we have a lot to talk about from Washington's perspective. Before we get into that, Bruce, let me get your point on any particular debate that is standing out, which is taking place in Central Asia about changes in Washington, D.C., or maybe lack thereof. Any thoughts?
Well, I mean, you know, they've seen several different presidents now, you know, since independence. So they are taking kind of a wait and watch approach. Most of them, some level, have congratulated Joseph Biden for becoming president. Turkmenistan still hasn't said anything about it. But like I said, the U.S. policy toward the region has changed. What it was in the 90s was different than what it was post 9/11, you know, and then under the Trump administration. And of course, I'm looking at this as a view from Europe because where I'm based right now, you know, when I would meet with Central Asians at conferences out here that were held by the European Union, they were kind of confused as to exactly what the Trump administration's policy was towards Central Asia. You know, and there's been some disappointment post 9/11, but certainly recently that they seem to feel that the U.S. views Central Asia through the prism of Afghanistan. And every conversation that the U.S. had with Central Asian leaders had to include something about Afghanistan, which is understandable to some point. But, you know, like I said, in the 1990s, that wasn't really the way that the U.S. approached Central Asia. Afghanistan is a neighbor in Central Asia. It's important that the situation there stabilizes. It's beneficial for Central Asians if it does. But, you know, like I said, there's been a feeling among some Central Asians that they're looked at as an appendage of Afghanistan, less than an independent region on their own.
Bruce, are you getting this feeling that this time the way Central Asians are reacting to changes in Washington, D.C., that might change? Do they expect something new under President Biden?
You know, it's no secret that the U.S. is disengaging from Afghanistan. We have no idea what level of cooperation that this administration will keep with Afghanistan. But it's clear to everybody that the U.S. would like to exit Afghanistan to the greatest degree possible. So they're kind of positioning themselves for that. You know, that does raise some hopes that maybe there'll be less focus on Afghanistan with them, except as being, you know, a good partner with Afghanistan and a little more perhaps. And I know there's a lot of attention that's devoted to the Central Asian states individually. But like I said, there's just been this feeling among Central Asians. And when I've been out in the region, I hear the same things, too, when I'm in Central Asia, you know, that Central Asia is only important to the U.S. because Afghanistan is important to the U.S.
Yeah.
I try to explain. That's not true, but that's general impression.
Yeah, let's get our guest's point of view from Washington. So looking into the region from Washington, Ambassador Spratlin, you are in Central Asia representing the Obama-Biden administration. We expect in many aspects Biden administration to pick up things where Obama-Biden administration left a couple of years ago. So how do you see Central Asia from the President Biden's lenses? Or President Biden's global map, where is Central Asia?
Well, first of all, let me just thank you for the invitation to participate in the program today and to join your guests. It's a pleasure to talk about Central Asia. I haven't been in the region for a couple of years since I left. Just to tweak the bio, I was the deputy chief of mission in Kazakhstan starting in 2009, and then I went to the Kyrgyz Republic and stayed there for 4 years as chief of mission, and then went to Uzbekistan, and that was my last overseas tour. So I was able to see on the ground a fair number of changes while I was in the region. But rather than talk about what Biden administration is going to do about Central Asia specifically, because I agree with your framing at the top, President Biden has a lot of priority setting to do, and I think he's going to be focused on a lot of the sort of inward housekeeping that the United States is going to have to do on its own based on events of recent weeks and recent years that are going to call on us to kind of to some renewal inside the United States and with our principal allies around the world and partners. So I think his immediate focus is going to be on unity of our own country and on reestablishing some basic principles that really have guided U.S. policy overall for a very long time. I think he's going to be focused on making sure that our alliances and partnerships are strong, that people know that the United States is back and ready to appropriately assume leadership positions. So I think those are the kinds of things that he's going to be focused on. I think it's important for us all to keep in mind that we have a pandemic that is a global threat to every single country all over the world, including the United States, which has surpassed a terrible milestone of 400,000 deaths. And so I think that we've heard a lot about different challenges and the crises that the United States faces all at the same time. And I think those are where the Biden administration is going to focus as in the first instance. But I do think that this issue of principles, of human rights being important again, of the role of the United States, again, of wanting to be engaged in the world. And there were some questions about that over the last few years. And I think that is something that will be changed based on now President Biden's history, long history in the Senate, being concerned about a variety of foreign policy issues. So the first thing is just, I think, reestablishing how the United States is going to engage in the world. I think what comes after that are what are our priorities, and I just mentioned what I think a few of them are going to be. If you've watched the testimony in the Senate hearings or even just listened to some of the commentary, you know that issues like China are going to be very, very much front and center, looking at those big strategic issues. Reestablishing our partnership with Europe. I think even that has been battered over the last few years. So that's going to be important. I think as we come closer to Central Asia, Afghanistan has already been mentioned, and there I would go to the testimony of General Austin in his confirmation hearing, where I think he actually left himself some space. It's very clear he said that we would like to leave Afghanistan. It's been 19 years. We've done a tremendous amount to help the Afghans, and there has been a process. It's unclear exactly where it will go to try to help the Afghans stabilize their own situation. But I think that the Secretary Designate of Defense also wants to be sure that the situation in Afghanistan is sufficiently stable that no threat to the United States could emerge again. And I think that that's going to be extremely important as we think about our policy. But I think the policy on China, the policy on Afghanistan, those two are going to be very important, as will be what is going to happen with our policy on Russia. This has taken a battering over the last few years and always is in the background as we think about Central Asia and all the former states of the former Soviet Union. And so I think that will also be important. I think as we come directly to the region, because it's going to take the administration a while to align it not only its priorities and reestablish the principles in a concrete way that our allies and others can see, but also just to get the team in place. It's going to take a while to get the people at every level that the president will need, because while, you know, he probably isn't going to directly focus on Central Asia immediately, as he gets his team in place, I think there will be some people who will be focused on Central Asia, and starting with the deputy secretary. Wendy Sherman was in the Kyrgyz Republic and in Kazakhstan in 2012, so she's somebody who's traveled to the region already and knows it. She came when I was chief of mission in the Kyrgyz Republic, and I looked at the statement of her availability to come to the region, and I think many of the things that she was going to focus on would still be issues in Central Asia. And in the meantime, while we're waiting for all this to be established, I think the current policy that was articulated in February of 2020 with respect to Central Asia has many elements of past policies. We're concerned about making sure that all the countries of Central Asia are able to be independent actors and choose their own partners, balance their foreign policies, but also set some expectations about norms, about governance, about human rights, and that sort of thing that we have about for many, many years. I would say that all of that is going to frame the way we approach Central Asia. But the good news is, I think that we are back and ready to engage the world at various levels. And I think it will benefit, ultimately, Central Asia as well.
Also, let me get Ambassador Courtney, your point on that. I mean, Ambassador Spratlin very nicely explained the big picture situation here in terms of the possible next steps from the Biden administration on a global stage and somewhat on Central Asia. So what do you expect, Ambassador Courtney, from the Biden administration when it comes to Central Asia? What might stay the same? What might change?
Mohammed, thanks for the invitation to participate, especially with such distinguished guests. I agree completely with Ambassador Spratlin's really eloquent description of the Biden administration's overall policy. With regard to Central Asia, looking back over 29 years now of modern independence for the countries, there are several aspects that really have been constant throughout. Now, let me just highlight a few of those. First, the very first policy of the United States, and indeed of the West, was strong support for the sovereignty, independence, and territorial integrity of the countries in the region. You know, there were some people at the beginning who thought the Central Asian countries would not remain independent or couldn't remain independent. There was, for example, former Foreign Minister Shevardnadze told Secretary of State Baker at one point that perhaps those countries couldn't remain independent unless they joined a union with Russia. But as it turned out, all the former Soviet states have remained independent. Second, there has been bipartisan support in the United States for our policy towards Central Asia from the very beginning. And that bipartisan support has continued. While the issues have changed, denuclearization in Kazakhstan at the beginning was the first big issue, support for Caspian energy development, support for economic development in the region and political development, all those have been bipartisan policies. Strong support for economic development, and there has been bipartisan disappointment at the lack of political development in most of the region. And then finally, I think from the very beginning, there's been a recognition that Central Asian states are wedged between great powers like Russia, China, Iran, Turkey, and that the role of the West could be helpful in helping the countries balance those relations with various other great powers and give them outside support. That's remained constant, and I think still is constant. Of course, in the early days, there was concern about whether Russia was going to behave imperialistically toward Central Asia. Fortunately, that turned out not to be such a great concern. And more recently, of course, that China's economic power is overwhelming in the area, and there continues to be concern about Iran and support for Turkey re-engaging in the region. So when you look back over the three decades, really strong support for Central Asia and consistent bipartisan all the way through.
Right. In terms of some nitty-gritty details, though, Ambassador Courtney, earlier I mentioned a lot has changed over the past couple of years in Central Asia. Not all of them are positive. For example, in Kazakhstan, you know, the country that you served in as ambassador, Nazarbayev stepped down from the presidency, opposite to some expected. Things stay by and large the same. Things have taken kind of U-turn in Kyrgyzstan, and there are some openings in Uzbekistan. So President Biden is kind of getting sort of a mixed picture in Central Asia. Is there anything you can expect from the team that he's putting in to focus on some of those human rights issues, rule of law, democracy? Earlier, Ambassador Spratlin also mentioned to be more proactive in the region in those aspects.
Ambassador Spratlin was correct that human rights will be more important for the Biden administration, and we're already seeing that now in strong statements by Jake Sullivan, the incoming National Security Advisor, for example, about Navalny's arrest, and Biden himself has spoken about that. So I think we'll see that concern. This disappointment in the West and in the United States with political stagnation in most of Central Asia has become a concern that has grown a bit over time. There has been disappointment certainly in Kazakhstan, where there was discussion about slow progress toward democracy, but essentially there's been no progress toward democracy, and that has been seen in the most recent election. So I think we can see that be an issue. And then there's also going to be concern about the human rights issues of repression in Xinjiang, where that repression has caught up as well Kazakhs and Kyrgyz and some others from Central Asia. So I think we'll see that. The Biden administration expressed strong concern, probably stronger concern than the Trump administration, about that human rights repression.
I have a couple of questions to Ambassador Tokhtakulov, but before that, Ambassador Spratlin, both of you, Ambassador Courtney and you, are kind of in agreement that, you know, human rights and democracy is going to be talked about going forward in Central Asia-U.S. relations. So if that is going to be the case, how you expect those concerns by Washington to be expressed? In which way, in which words? Do you expect any change in tone the way these issues are raised by the U.S. diplomats representing the Biden administration?
Well, I think, again, we can't put words in the mouths of people who aren't yet there. Right. So we have to wait until the team is actually assembled and has a chance to get itself in place. I certainly agree with Bill Courtney about everything he said concerning the history of our concerns and how stable they've been. You know, some things have been more important in some countries or at different times. But I think what the main way in which we'll see concern expressed, a couple of main ways, are very traditional. One is statements that get made by officials, whether they're at the embassy level in Washington, and whether those are made in the press or through various programs about our enduring commitment to supporting democracy efforts and human rights efforts in Central Asia. I think we'll see that. And then we'll see it in terms of the people who are actually nominated. And there, I'd just like to note Samantha Power being nominated to go to USAID. Given her strong statements, her book, her work in the past, I think there's a clear message already that's been sent just by her nomination that this is important to the United States to associate issues of human rights with development. So I think that kind of thing is how concretely it will be expressed. In terms of the region itself, I'd just like to say that, unfortunately, while we have seen some, you at the very top of the program, you mentioned that the region is very, very different. And in some ways, I would say that's true. And in some ways, it really isn't. If we look around the region at the leadership, there are quite a few familiar faces. And if we think about what is happening in the trends, I would certainly agree with Bill Courtney about Kazakhstan and some of the disappointment there. But it isn't limited to Kazakhstan. Greatly disappointed in Turkmenistan, just no opportunity there for change. Tajikistan, same familiar faces who are doing many of the same things that we consider to be hostile to a positive future for the country. And in the Kyrgyz Republic, it's, you know, I look forward to hearing from Kadir Toktogulov about how that whole series of developments that we've seen recently is being seen in the region, because I would say that looked from outside, given what the United States has just been through, it's going to be difficult to find common ground on that score. So it's not a question of a completely different region. We see many familiar faces, and unfortunately, we see some backsliding, even in places where we would have expected progress. And so I think there are going to have to be some interesting and challenging conversations about what is happening in the area of political development and political reform at the same time, because remember, we're going to do more than one thing at a time, that we are talking about whatever opportunities opportunities there may be to develop relations with each one of the countries, which each one is now on a different kind of trajectory in terms of its economy, in terms of its politics. But there are some common themes that we are seeing, and they're not all positive.
Yeah. Just to clarify what you referred to my opening in terms of the changes in Central Asia that I was talking about earlier. Yeah, that's exactly what you said, the backsliding in some countries, especially situation in Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan, and the disappointments that both you and Ambassador Courtney was talking about in Kazakhstan. And of course, situation in Turkmenistan remains a very concerning. So to look into these from the receiving end, Ambassador Totokulov, so this is the possible scenario in ways in which the Biden administration might be engaging with Central Asia. So how does it sound like from where you are?
I would actually like to echo what Ambassador Courtney and Ambassador Spratlin said about the growing importance of human rights and democracy for the incoming administration. They both know that one of the biggest irritants always in bilateral relationship with any Central Asian republic is the issue of human rights. And I did notice that Samantha Powers was nominated to lead USAID, and it would be interesting to see how assistance programs by USAID would be modified or changed, or how they would be rearranged to meet the new administration's priorities on development and human rights. And one thing that was interesting to me was that at the National Security Council, Central Asia used to be part of a department that was with South Asia. So it was South and Central Asia.
Right.
And now what I saw was the senior director that would work on Russia would also work on Central Asia. So I'm not sure what to make of it, and I'm sure Ambassador Spratlin and Ambassador Courtney would have more to say, or I would be interested to hear their interpretation of such change at the national security level. But generally, I mean, my impression has always been that U.S. Foreign policy has been more or less steady towards Central Asia, and I expect that to be the case with the new administration too. And, you know, the incoming Secretary of State is very well aware with Central Asia. He was also engaged on bilateral issues with Kyrgyzstan. So on one level, it's good to have Secretary of State who would be familiar with the region. But with the pandemic that's still going on in the world, which has severely hit Central Asia, certainly the expectation in the region would be that the U.S. administration would continue or even boost its support to Central Asian countries to deal with economic crisis, to deal with healthcare issues, to help with vaccination rollout. So there are quite a few big issues that the Central Asian countries would expect some support from the U.S. administration.
Right.
But I think one big thing is something that we've been talking about is how important issue of human rights and democracy would be to the Biden administration, and how they will incorporate this in their interactions with the governments in Central Asia. One thing Central Asian governments don't like to hear is criticism of how they handle their political processes, and that's probably going to be true for the new president of Kyrgyzstan.
Right. Thank you, Ambassador Totokulov. I sense some instability in your internet connection. I hope it won't get further worse. So beyond the regional issues that we spoke about, Central Asia being mixed up with Afghan affairs and U.S. policies with regards to Russia or China, so what level of engagement we should expect to see directly happening between the region and the United States? What can be improved based on what we learned from our previous experiences working with Central Asia? Let's continue the Majlis podcast talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Ambassador Pamela Spartlin, top former U.S. diplomat in Central Asia with previous assignments in Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, Moscow, and most recently in Uzbekistan, Ambassador Bill Courtney, former U.S. ambassador to Georgia in Kazakhstan, Ambassador Kadir Tokhtagulov, former Kyrgyz ambassador to the United States and Canada, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast and Radio Free Europe, Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing possible U.S. Central Asia relations under the Biden administration. So let me start with you, Ambassador Spartlin, again. You have a very rich diplomatic experience in Central Asia. So from your experience, what did work in U.S. Central Asia relations that can offer some clues to the current administration so that they can build on it as they about to engage the region?
Well, I think it's a very good question. To focus on what's positive and what has worked in the past. And again, recognizing that things are not static and that we're going to need to think about how we create the future. I would say just one of the most important things is what Bill Courtney mentioned, that the United States has always been focused on supporting the sovereignty and independence of Central Asian states and making sure that we do what we can to help these states create their own policies. As you say, whether they're internal policies or external policies, they are sovereign states and they're going to decide for themselves. And so making sure that they have, whether it's called multi-vector or whatever word we're using, that has been a central focus from the very beginning. And I think it will remain one. And I think that's particularly important as we start to look at some of these strategic issues and the pressures from other states that may continue to come to Central Asian states from some of the countries that you've mentioned. So I would say that sharing that focus on the sovereignty and independence of Central Asian states has worked in the past, and I think it's something that we will continue to do. A second thing that I think has worked in the past and will always be there, and this goes to what I mentioned earlier concerning Secretary of Defense Designate Austin, and that is reduce terrorist threats in Central Asia to make sure that just as we're concerned about Afghanistan not posing a threat to the region or to the United States, we want to be sure that that is also true in Central Asia. We've done a lot in the past to talk about and work on, identify where we see threats. We don't always agree where those threats are, but to make sure that that conversation continues and whatever support we can give also will go to cooperating in that area. A third one, and related, is supporting the stability of Afghanistan. Whatever happens with the United States, the countries of Central Asia are very close neighbors to Afghanistan. In the case of Uzbekistan in particular, I think that country has done a lot to kind of move forward and be very, very front and center in trying to support not only Afghanistan's development, but the relationship between the two countries. So I think that's a space to watch very, very closely. And a fourth area is connectivity between Central Asia and Afghanistan. Again, one of the talking points we often used in the past was that this is one of the least connected regions in the world. And I think that a lot has been done to try to work on that. And I think because the connectivity is really key to the issue that all of the countries of Central Asia face, which is how to build a sustainable and diversified economy that doesn't depend exclusively on natural resources, but that begins to look at other talents and opportunities for these countries to work together and to become more economically stable. And I think that means more connections with one another. And the United States has been, I think, really pleased to see some of the things that have been happening over time on that. Number five, working on rule of law reform and respect for human rights. There are people in every single state in Central Asia who would like to see different governance, who would like to see better governments, who would like to see reductions in corruption. We always want to work with those people because it's important in our country, it's important in every country, to make sure that the citizens of the country enjoy the best governance and least interference from nefarious forces in all aspects of life. And so working on rule of law and respect for human rights has been important. Investment, all of the countries of Central Asia are centrally concerned with foreign direct investment and trying to get more U.S. firms or more technical assistance or more support. And the United States has various ways of supporting that goal. And I think that's something that has worked in the past. Perhaps not all of the expectations of the Central Asian states have been fulfilled for various reasons, but I think that is another conversation that will continue. And I would say one of the platforms that we've developed to talk about all of these things has been C5 plus one. I was very pleased to see the last administration continue what Secretary Kerry started when he came to Uzbekistan. And I suspect that that diplomatic platform, which still needs development, is a place where we can come together and address this question of what has worked in the past and then what might we do to build on that for the future. So I would say those are some of the areas, if we're talking about what has worked in the past, that we would want to continue on in the future. Mm-hmm. I would say another area, if I could just mention, is some of the cultural diplomacy, the education programs. Those have been very effective and well received in many countries, not all. And to the extent that those opportunities are ones we can talk about together for the young people of the region, we certainly want to be engaged in that conversation as well.
Mm-hmm. So, long list, obviously. Ambassador Courtney, let me bring you in and picking up with one thing that Ambassador Spratlin has said, that is the human rights aspect in the support for democracy. So let's be clear here. Despite some progress, there are a lot to be aspired in Central Asia. You know, compared to other countries, in U.S. diplomacy, we put these stuff in the forefront of our approach or diplomacy. So what are the mechanisms through which these values can be expressed more forcefully in Central Asia? And are you expecting this to be the case under Biden administration? Because we know President Biden paying high attention in some of those issues.
Thank you for that question. The Biden administration will likely give overall more attention to human rights issues, but this is a worldwide issue. It's not just a issue focused on Central Asia. So I would expect that, for example, we will see more high-level U.S. attention on human rights issues in Russia, in part because, you know, Russia was more democratic and has been backsliding, and there are so many prominent cases there. And then, as I mentioned earlier, in Xinjiang, I think we'll see a lot of attention on that. With regard to Central Asia, the Biden administration will probably be offering more quiet support, if you will, through programs to promote civil society development, for example, through USAID, through quiet efforts to encourage the governments to make some progress, but without trying to humiliate them, if you will. So that's an area that is going to be delicate, not going to be easy. I think the Biden administration will focus as well on corruption issues. In the Transparency International ratings of corruption perceptions, the Central Asian countries are among the poorest performers in the world. And I think the administration, Biden administration, will see a correlation, if you will, between societies in which corruption is so great and in which human rights are not respected, democracy is not making progress. The Central Asian countries inherited the Soviet top-down, both political arrangements and economic arrangements. And on the political side, this has meant unitary governments which control virtually everything. So even in places like Uzbekistan, where there's some efforts to make progress, you know, there are real questions whether top-down reforms can take the country as far as it needs to go. Top-down is still a major issue in Kazakhstan, for example. It's not yet clear that even though Tokayev, brilliant diplomat, is president, there hasn't been any relaxation of pressure, police pressure on peaceful demonstrators, for example. So I think those are kinds of issues that people will focus on.
Right. One more thought, follow-up on that. Is there anything we could do differently, more forcefully? Is there any lesson we can learn from the past experience in terms of promoting these values that we are talking about, human rights and democracy and rule of law? Is there anything we could learn from the past and do it differently at this time?
So most of the tools that have been used in the past, including RFERL, for example, Voice of America, broadcasting, making information available through internet broadcast into regions of the world where democracy and human rights are not well respected. Those remain powerful tools. To my mind, the investment U.S. has made in RFERL over the decades is probably one of the most cost-effective U.S. investments. There will be other possibilities through, as Ambassador Spratlin pointed out, through educational exchanges to help raise awareness. So, for example, there is American University of Central Asia in Bishkek, Kazakhstan, through a Bol Shop program, has sent a lot of young people abroad. There is Nazarbayev University in Nur-Sultan, which has also opened up activity, and KEMAP in Almaty. Institutions of learning like this help raise awareness and consciousness in Central Asia about human rights and democracy standards in other parts of the world. this is going to be a slow process, but the U.S. and the Biden administration will be looking to see that some progress is being made. And right now, there's a disappointment that progress has been too slow and that there could be a risk that expectations of people are going to, let's say, increase, and the gap between expectations and reality is going to widen. And that's often where color revolutions or social disruptions occur.
Thanks, Ambassador. So, Bruce, can I bring you in here? Your expert analysis is very important to put all these in context. So what we are talking about here is sort of a new beginning in U.S. Central Asia relations, given the fact that every administration comes in with its own priorities. So while the Biden team is preparing its priorities and putting together the right team to advance those priorities, is there anything they should keep in mind? Like, is there anything they could do differently in terms of making a difference in those issues that are hallmark of U.S. diplomacy, like promoting civil liberties, press freedom, and democratic values? You follow these developments in Central Asia, so I don't have to really remind you. What I'm talking about here is, it's been a roller coaster ride over the past couple of years in many aspects in the region like we have never seen before. And the pressure on civil society is expanding. Your thoughts?
Of course, I'm not a diplomat, so I'm looking at this from kind of a different angle than our other guests.
Right.
I kind of wander around the countryside and spend all my time in villages and things like that. I know what worked in the 90s really well, and when people had a lot of respect for the U.S. is when we really, and admittedly, the governments were more malleable in those days. I mean, they were newly independent and everything, but people really appreciated the fact that the U.S. put pressure on the governments when they didn't respect human rights and basic freedoms. A lot of times I remember there was a problem in Uzbekistan, for instance, in Tashkent, I think in 1993, where the security at the airport had roughed up one of the U.S. embassy employees who was a local employee but worked at the U.S. embassy there. And there was a flight coming from Uzbekistan with Uzbek officials to Washington. And when it landed in Washington, they sent it back right away without meeting with anyone. They just said, go back home. And there was this idea that if you had a problem and your own government wouldn't listen to you, then you would try to make your problem known to some U.S. officials. A week before Andijan, there was a group of farmers from Kashkadaria outside the U.S. embassy in Tashkent that were appealing to the U.S. officials to do something, put some pressure on Uzbek officials to help them make their conditions better on the farm in Uzbekistan. And that was true in a lot of places in Central Asia. There was a lot of goodwill for the U.S. because people had the idea that when their governments were resistant to change or were abusing them, that if they could get their problem known to American officials, that the American officials would press those problems. And I know that, when you talk with diplomats, they always say, we do raise these concerns. We do raise them all the time. But it was much more open in the 1990s. Now, I know time has passed. The relationships have changed. The Central Asian governments are more mature than they were at that time. But I can remember, like I said, as an American who wanders through all the time, right? I'm driving in cars with people that I've hired on the outskirts of town, taking buses, taking trains and stuff. There was a lot more respect for me as, when I say I'm from America in the 1990s for those reasons. Because people thought, okay, you guys are into human rights. You know what we need. You know what would work, how to defend the rights of people so that we all live dignified lives and everything like that. And, a lot of that, there's competition with other countries out there, but people don't see that aspect of U.S. policy towards Central Asia as much as they did 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that's just my observations from traveling around, is that we went from being a potential defender of the people to being, someone who is much more interested in the geopolitical situation in the region, looking at other neighboring countries and viewing everything through that lens.
That's very interesting point. Ambassador Spratlin, do you like to add anything into what just Bruce said?
I would. Thank you. I do appreciate Bruce's perspective from the region. But I just want to underscore that we're looking forward. We're not looking back. I just like to know that there are a few areas, particularly in a place like Uzbekistan, where I think there really has been some progress. If we just, even the issue of press freedom, I certainly want to agree with everything that was said earlier about RFERL and the importance of it, the Voice of America also. But there is I wouldn't say an open press by any means in the countries of Central Asia. But in some countries, there's certainly more openness than there has been in the past. In the Kyrgyz Republic, I just listened to an RFERL podcast where Iskander from Klub KG was on, talking about some of the developments that were taking place in late November. I mean, now that kind of openness is not available in every country, but it does exist there. And I would say there are some slight openings in Uzbekistan on the issue of prison releases. There's been a lot of progress made, and I was very proud to be part of helping to encourage the government to release a number of people and to close a notorious prison. On the issue of cotton, which has long been an irritant, lots of progress in Uzbekistan, working with the World Bank and with the International Labor Organization. On the issue of religious freedom, the United States has worked very hard to press for more religious freedom, particularly in Uzbekistan, and there have been some advances there. So I would say that, you know, I can't speak to what was happening in the 90s. I wasn't there. But I do think that the United States has, through what Colin Powell used to call the slow patient work, has helped the countries make some decisions that did offer some openings in certain areas. Was it as much as the activists and the most vocal voices would have wanted in Central Asia? Perhaps not. But I think it's important to go back to a point that was made earlier by Bill Courtney, and that is, what is the form of government here? We're talking about top-down societies that are run by people whose formation came during the Soviet period. And we still have that same generation of leaders in most places. So it's going to take time for that to change, because the comfort with that kind of leadership is still very much there. So I think the United States does have a new beginning now, with a renewed focus on human rights issues that will come from things that we have talked about. But I do think that there are some complicating factors, and some of those come from the region itself.
Right. Ambassador Tukhtakulov, as we were talking about, I mean, every new administration is a new beginning in many ways. So as President Biden is forming up his team, what would you would like to tell to our audience in terms of what worked and what did not work, and what Central Asia would like to see going forward in the U.S. foreign policy towards Central Asia?
I think Central Asian republics, and this is what we've been talking about today during our discussion, is they would definitely like to see support and more resources offered to balance their relations with key foreign policy partners. Mm. There's certainly growing Chinese influence in the region. Russia considers Central Asia its own sphere of influence. So the United States is one of those important partners that are seen as a foreign policy partner that could help balance relations.
How can they do that, Ambassador Tukhtakulov, in concrete terms? How can U.S. help to balance those influences?
Well, with the United States, engagement really matters. Countries of Central Asia, they look at the United States and they seek engagement. When it comes to other countries, it could be a little bit different. But with the United States, it's platforms like C5+1 that has helped boost engagement between the United States and Central Asia. So I think one big thing that Central Asian countries would like to see is engagement. But at the same time, what's the product of that engagement? You know, if those conversations and those meetings result and you end up arguing over human rights and some of issues that you have in political systems in Central Asia, then probably that engagement would not lead to something positive. So I'm very curious to see how Biden administration will approach Central Asia and how important the issues of human rights and democracy will be, and certainly whether there is any appetite on the part of Central Asian governments to discuss those issues. Mm-hmm. So, and then, you know, as I said, very few senior government officials in the region are happy when they hear concerns about human rights and democracy in their own countries.
Yeah, that's
from U.S. officials.
That's a tough topic, as you said, Ambassador. But as a former top diplomat, former top official in the previous Kyrgyz administration, how much you would like to see those values, human rights, and support for democracy at the forefront of the U.S. policy going forward?
I'm not in foreign service anymore as a private citizen. I've always appreciated the U.S. government's support for progress on the issues of human rights and freedoms. And latest decisions by the U.S. government to sanction some of controversial figures that are linked to corruption and organized crime, I was okay with those decisions, and I saw that those moves by the U.S. government as important steps to support Kyrgyz society's efforts to deal with the issues of corruption and organized crime. So, you know, there's one thing that, you know, ordinary citizens would like to see, and governments certainly have different priorities. And as Bruce said, in the past, Central Asian governments were much more engaging on those issues, and over the years they've become less patient for such conversations and discussions.
Mm-hmm. Right. Also, maybe Ambassador Courtney, you might like to jump in here. I know you have to leave us in a few minutes, and also we need to wrap the discussion very shortly. So how the policy ends up being shaped, it also depends on how the team is shaping up. Any insight as to what kind of team are you going to see who will be dealing with this region, with Eurasia and Central Asia in particular?
Yes. So we have seen that Tony Blinken is going to be Secretary of State. Right. Tony and Strobe Talbot in 2015 had a long discussion at Brookings in a presentation on U.S. policy on Central Asia when Tony was Deputy Secretary of State. Victoria Nuland, who will be Under Secretary of State for Political Affairs, has long experience in the early 90s. She was in the American Embassy in Moscow. She has worked on former Soviet activities for much of her career. So that's really terrific. In the National Security Council, Andrea Kendall Taylor will have responsibility for Russia and Central Asia. She also has a strong academic background. So there will be experienced officials who really do know something about Central Asia. Let me also mention, if I may, just two other issues we haven't touched on, which are important. One is nuclear nonproliferation. Kazakhstan has been a star performer in this area for nearly three decades, most recently by agreeing to host the International Atomic Energy Agency Nuclear Fuel Bank in Kazakhstan. And the second issue is Caspian energy. The U.S. has given strong support to its oil companies, which have developed Caspian energy. Despite lower oil prices, the high quality of the oil coming out of the Caspian area is such that the area is expanding. Chevron, Exxon are expanding the Tengiz project and one of the largest oil expansion projects in the world. So nuclear nonproliferation and energy will continue to be quite important.
Right. Yeah, certainly. I know there are lots of topics that I'm skipping today. And the issues and the topics that we have been talking about today was mostly on aspirational terms, as such that we don't yet exactly know how things are going to shape up as the Biden administration is just moving in and policies are being formulated as we speak. So what we were doing today was kind of educated guesses, as we say in journalistic terms. But I'm happy that Ambassador Courtney is impressed by the team that's shaping up so far who will be dealing with the region and the broader foreign policy issues. So I guess we will get back to this topic very soon as things become more clear. In the meantime, we will keep our eyes open as to what comes next. And let me end the conversation exactly on that point. So to determine what is next and what's in store for U.S. Central Asia relations and where it is headed going forward, what are the signs that you will be looking at, Ambassador Spartlin?
Well, first of all, thanks very much for the opportunity to be on the program. I appreciate that. I would say a couple of things, and I certainly agree with Bill Courtney on the issue of Kazakhstan and some of these big picture issues like nuclear nonproliferation. But I would say that as we begin, it really is setting the tone. What kind of discourse is there going to be between the countries of Central Asia and the United States? And my hope would be is that we could have as wide a platform as possible for talking about engagement, and not a priori put ourselves in a situation where, either coming from the United States or coming from inside the region, we would say, well, we're not going to talk about this issue, but we're happy to talk about these other issues. Because I think that's a way of cutting off the flow of dialogue, which is what we really need to figure out how we're going to set the table and then actually engage as we go forward. So having that, what I will be looking for is the broadness of vision coming both from the region and then the willingness to engage on the part of the United States. I think that's that issue of engagement is going to be front and center. And then I think there are going to be a variety of issues, many of which we've talked about. But some of these issues concerning governance and anti-corruption, political reform, I think, you know, those will be topics of discussion. I am sure that the issue of the economy, and also, as was mentioned by Kadir Taktagula, the issue of public health, because that's an issue that concerns every single country all over the globe. It's an urgent issue right now. And I think the United States, in addition to dealing with this issue in our own country, which is urgent, we are preparing to re-engage with the world at the level of the World Health Organization, and I think that will be true of globally and including in potentially Central Asia. But I would say the main thing is to make sure that we all start seeing this as a new day and using the opportunity to have as broad a discussion as possible of what might make the relationships work better.
Right, right. On the same question, Master Courtney, so what would be the area you will be looking at to determine what is ahead in U.S. Central Asian relations?
Well, I think the economic areas are going to be important. Mm. All of the Central Asian countries, as Ambassador Spratlin mentioned, want more foreign investment. But attracting more foreign investment requires that there be more opportunities for investors. State enterprises are prevalent throughout Central Asia. They close off parts of the economy that foreign investors might be interested in. As I mentioned earlier, the corruption is a big barrier for foreign investment. As the countries in Central Asia look ahead, the world economy is growing, and Central Asian economies on balance are not doing as well as they could be doing. So looking ahead for more opportunities for economic development and political development will essentially require that governments play smaller roles and governments allow more freedom for civil society and for private enterprise to function. I think the Biden administration will be looking in a general direction to see that these countries are allowing more opportunity for private initiative.
Okay. On the same question, Ambassador Taktagula, where your eyes will be to determine what's ahead in U.S. Central Asia relations, or to determine how much is the same and what are the changes?
Well, Central Asian republics this year in particular will be looking for support and assistance in dealing with the economic crisis and public health crisis, as we spoke about earlier. These two are the most important issues that the region will be facing this year. And as the pandemic hopefully winds down, every republic in Central Asia will be looking for ways to boost economic growth, to address and those issues that were in public health sector. So I would expect that these two issues would be most important going forward in relations between the United States and Central Asia.
Bruce, finally, your points. I mean, where your eyes will be, where you will be looking at to determine how this thing is shaping up now under Biden administration.
Well, you know, the people have spoken about what our policy has been, and there already are a lot of very good things are going on. I agree, you know, the respect for their sovereignty and promoting that because, you know, as Ambassador Courtney said earlier, they got Russia and China as neighbors. You got to have more friends than that and some powerful friends outside if you want to keep your independence and sovereignty. So that's good. We have educational exchanges. That's also good. You know, there's a lot of very good areas where the U.S. is cooperating with Central Asia. There's no doubt about it. I suppose maybe the only thing I would really want to see, and this is actually more for you and me, I suppose, than the diplomats, is to bring those things out to the people of Central Asia. Reading through Central Asian media every day for years and years and years, you don't get that so much that impression about the U.S. as an interested party, but they don't want, the U.S. does not want Central Asia to be dependent upon the United States. They want them to stand on their own two feet all the time, both regionally and individually as countries. You know, whereas you look at China, all of them are in debt to China, you know, some of them cripplingly. And as far as Russia always wants to get its influence on there. You see these tired old phrases about it being Russia's backyard. And, you know, even in Central Asia, a lot of people got that idea. But I think what needs to come through more is that, yes, the U.S. is your friend. And we want to be your friends for the long term and help you out as we can, you know, but we're not going to force any of our help on you, I suppose, you know, and reinforce the point that friendships are built on common interests, you know. So we're willing, in some places we have to be able to meet each other halfway on some of these points, like human rights. So I suppose that would be about it. Like I said, it's more of a PR question, I suppose, in some respects, than it actually is the actual diplomacy that's going on. The diplomacy is there, but it's not getting through to the people very well in Central Asia.
Interesting. Okay, terrific. With this note, let's pause our conversation right here. I'm sure we are going to get back to this topic, discussing some other aspects of U.S. Central Asia relations very soon. So with this, thank you very much, Ambassador William Courtney, U.S. Ambassador to Kazakhstan and Georgia, Ambassador Pamela Spratlin, top former U.S. diplomat in Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, and most recently in Uzbekistan, Ambassador Kadir Tokhtakulov, former Kyrgyz ambassador to USA in Canada, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. Thank you very much, colleagues, for your time and thoughts today.
Thank you.
And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.